Welcome to the Recovery Centered Podcast, the space for honest conversations about healing, hope, and the journey through mental health and addiction recovery. Each episode, we sit down with people making a difference, from therapists and researchers to change makers and survivors, now to explore what recovery really looks like in the real world. This podcast is produced in collaboration with Beachway Therapy Center. Let's get started. Hello, everybody. Tim Roberto here, your host for the Beachway podcast. And what an honor it is to be here to do another session, to have another podcast, interview another guest. And, you know, I couldn't ask for a better position, a better platform to do this. And thank you, Beachway, for always being there for, you know, the mental health space, the substance abuse space, the trauma, the families, and, of course, our first responders. Our new track, After the Call, has been an incredible success. And I feel very proud of being part of that. So we brought our guest today is Tia. I've known Tia probably, about a year now?
I was at Beachway. I left February of 23.
Wow. It really is going quick. My dad was right. The older you get, Tim, why do you keep doing what you're doing? It's going to go faster and faster. Italian guy.
It's true.
And here I am, 63 in August. I can't believe I've known you that long already. And I've always admired Tia. I've always been comfortable around here, her. I'm usually comfortable around most people because I'm on a different side of the street temporarily when I meet people new that come into Beachway as clients. So I'm on a different... But to watch the transformation is, there's just something very special, something very unique. And I don't know, it just creates that friendship. Like, I just seen you today for the first time in, a year?
Yeah.
And it was like, I just had lunch with her yesterday. So I'm really honored to have her here because I've seen her transformation. And this is why I keep doing what I do. This is why Beachway keeps doing what they do. This is why Tia said yes, because we were just talking before we went live. You know, Tia, I just want to reach that one person because I don't know who's going to watch this. That part I'm not involved in. I'm involved in showing up and getting wonderful people like yourself that have overcome these huge obstacles. So with that being said, everybody, I want to introduce you to Tia. Tia, how are you? It's great to see you.
Thanks, Tim. You're right. It's you just kind of pick up where you left off. In a sense.
Yeah.
In another sense, it's like so much transformation has happened. You know, when we first met, I couldn't even hold down a conversation.
I remember.
Just coming. My nervous system was just fried.
Yeah.
Years and years of repression and. Yeah, it just short-circuited, if you will.
Yeah.
I think just, and you're not even like a loud guy, but just the voice and it just, you know, just anything to that would stimulate is like a wire without its coating on it. And you just touch that wire.
Are you referring to that day in the group that we had?
Yeah.
You cool going there?
I do, yeah. I remember.
You remember, right?
I remember... It like Beachway so vividly.
Yeah.
Yeah, like so vividly. Yeah. It was like redoing my childhood. Yep. It was having the chance to actually have a childhood is what Beachway was like.
Yeah.
I reverted back to my 4-year-old self, which at 4 years old, that was when I had my first substantial traumatic event happen.
Yep.
My dad leaving and, and so when my nervous system fried, I guess I just reverted right back to when I started repressing.
Yeah.
That repression is what.
Yeah. And what a great spot you went back to because prior to meeting again here today, we met on the, you know, at the facility at campus and we still were reminiscing a little bit and we talked about that day when I was, communicating with you, interacting with you, and next thing you know, you were
The,
what?
the ticking.
She would start ticking. Yeah. I mean, is all trauma.
Right.
Trauma, nervous system. And I said to myself, wow, did I come out of the gate too quick on her? I only just met her. But, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, if you're in Beachway, something's going on and possibly your life could be on the line.
Right.
So sometimes I can move quick, and that was my question to myself. Wow, did I move too quick?
No, it was not at all. Like, it just was anything new. Anything new. Any kind of sound. And it was completely involuntary ticking, and it was defense postures. Like just protecting myself, hiding. And it was just completely involuntary. That bio bed, man, that was the only relief that I could get from those ticks. Being in that shell, in that, because it's in a closet, you know, where there's no windows, anything. It's just pitch black. And, you know, I would spend hours in that thing because it was the only relief I could get. And I didn't feel like I had to hide or anything. And, you know, I had to wear... I think I was beyond the headphones. The sound canceling when I met you, but in the very, very beginning, I had to wear those.
Were you using anything else to get away like that prior to Beachway?
Oh, sure, drugs and alcohol.
Drugs and alcohol, a lot of them, I bet.
Yeah, I didn't have the when the ticks came. That's when we started making phone calls and found Beachway. But I, to escape. Because I think I just, my body and my nervous system got to a point where I couldn't repress anymore. My mother died in June of 2020. And I think that that just sent me over the edge. That's when I went heavy into drinking, heavy into drug usage. It was just too big of a tidal wave to repress. You know, I just didn't have the strength, I guess. I don't know. It was just too much to be able to repress.
Yeah, I think the body over time, like, you know, the classic saying, right? Like, the body keeps score, you know. And I think just over time, for lack of a better word at the moment, like lack of skills.
Yes.
You know, the body just can't get out. You know, I call them little clicks when I'm doing groups, like the Rubik's Cubes, all these little click, 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 click. And eventually it just gets too much.
Yeah.
You know, and it's beyond, it's just beyond, you know, lack of skills, dysfunction. It's the body. I'm physically just breaking down.
Yeah. I mean, it's without having the proper tools.
100%.
I didn't have the
tools. Yeah, the soul and the spirit and the, right? Your vibe.
Absolutely.
Do you think being a police officer contributed a lot to that?
I think, yes, it did. I turned to law enforcement to escape. My own personal opinion is that everyone who joins has, you have to be ill. You have to be ill in some way to do that job because you're exposed to so much. And I, you know, that's just my experience. I can only speak for myself, but it's hard to not see things through my own lens, you know?
Well, you've been there, you've experienced it. Like, unless you're a police officer or a first responder, I mean, you can't understand something you never experienced.
Right. And I joined law enforcement to be safe. My childhood was not safe at all. And to protect because I was not protected as a child. And so I wanted to become those things that I never was. And of course, these were not thoughts in the forefront of my mind. But, you know, looking back...
I love the way you put that. It's kind of like poetic.
Yeah.
It was nice. Yeah, very well put.
Well, thank you. It was definitely a rescue. I just thought that was the ultimate safety and protection, was to be it.
So you started out like as a regular police officer, street?
I did, yeah. Right? I turned 21 in the academy.
Yeah.
And I went out on patrol. And, you know, I quickly found, you know, they talk about the brotherhood, the thin blue line, all that stuff. I quickly felt protected by my brothers around me. This is a part of my story that you don't know about, Tim. I, you know, in my first patrol job, I had a lieutenant who was my training officer, and, you know, I come from a traumatic background, don't understand boundaries, don't know what boundaries are.
Yeah.
And I get, you know, look, I'm still a kid at 21, yeah. You know, I didn't feel like a kid at that age.
Yeah.
but I saw the safety in these men around me, and I got too close and didn't have the boundaries, and I experienced a sexual assault from my superior officer. And that started me on a rage.
Real spiral, huh?
Yes. And then I saw how that community, once you become a ripple in the current, they cast you out.
And start shutting it down, right?
Yeah, and so the bad press that I was bringing to the department, really wanted to shut the book and get me out of there as quick as possible. And so I went on to my next department. And from there, you know, like, he got his police officer, his peace officer license is what it's called in Missouri, taken away. But that's all that came out of that. When I went on to my next department, oh man, I just became anger on fire.
Yep. Betrayed again, kind of, right?
Mm-hmm. So betrayed by who I wanted to be rescued by.
Oh wow.
And I then, you know, we talk about the drama triangle where you're the perpetrator, the rescuer, or the victim, and I became the perpetrator. I became everything that I stood against. I never broke any laws. I never could, but man, I got closest. I walked that line.
Yeah. You went on a mission or two, huh?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
And I sought out what I was afraid of. I sought out the people who were like my mom. I sought out the people who were like my family.
Can I ask you what mom was like?
Yeah, growing up, so her and my dad, I was 4, and her and my dad divorced after 21 or 22 years of being together. And so she had me later in life. Mm. She just became a raging alcoholic.
Oh, wow.
My older siblings were out of the house, so there's a significant age gap.
Yeah.
So it was like I was the only child.
I get that, too. It was big between my brothers and I.
Yeah.
I was the youngest.
It's like 10, 12, and 15 years between
us. Oh, that's a lot.
Us. Yeah. And so they were gone, you know, and so she was at the bar and just drinking, and so I grew up in that alcoholic environment.
Yeah. Yeah, not getting your basic needs.
Oh, no. You know, I stole food from school so that I could eat. Being cold is still a trigger to this day because our winters, we didn't have heat, you know. And sometimes she could get the gas tank filled, and sometimes she could get wood for the other stove, you know. So the heat was not consistent. It just came and went.
Yeah.
But looking back, I mean, my mother did the best she could with what she had. You know, I did have a lot of resentments with her, you know, towards her in the beginning.
Yeah.
In the beginning of my recovery. But now I see, when I compare her childhood next to my childhood, my God, she gave me everything. No wonder she was mad at me for being so ungrateful, you know, like compared to what she had. And that goes to that generational trauma.
You had a generational curse.
Mm-hmm.
You were a recipient of it. Was her mom or dad an alcoholic too? Or?
Yeah, her dad.
Her dad?
Yeah.
Do you know what kind of alcohol? Was he a mean, kind of angry?
Yes, mean. He beat my grandmother. And my mother would step in and try to protect, you know.
There's one of those clicks.
Absolutely. And they were poor, you know, my great-grandparents came from Mexico, and so my mother was not an immigrant, but she was the second generation, first however you do that. Her parents were the
first. Cultures are like night and day.
Yeah, the cultures.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, they were terrified of him.
Yeah.
Growing up. Yeah. So.
So she was walking on eggshells.
Oh, absolutely.
And it doesn't surprise me at all. You were walking on eggshells.
Absolutely.
Like, it's that part of that cycle, like, and I like the way you said that. You know, like that you're at peace with yourself and probably your mom.
Yes.
You know, that she was working on what she, you know, what she was, what she had or what she, but that's the thing about it, right? I work with so many people, like, you know, it's, as a professional, it's really inappropriate, but even as a sponsor, I sponsor a lot of people too. And it's just really inappropriate to like bash somebody's parents or just,
because
they're just operating on what was given them.
Yeah.
Just like I heard what was, you know, you're operating on what was given you, and it wasn't very nice for her. It sounds like a long time.
Absolutely. It definitely was in therapy where I learned to take those two things and put them, you know, her childhood versus my childhood, because I never could.
Yep.
Because to me, it makes sense. Food, shelter, clothing. Like, it seems common sense.
It seems it. And as a little kid, you're not mature enough. You're underdeveloped.
Right.
And you're thinking, gee, my mom today is going to wake up and she's going to look and say, gee, do I get some heat or food or do I drink?
Right.
Nah, we can get that tomorrow. I'll drink. You know,
right.
Like, you're not having that conversation.
Right.
You don't obviously have no idea what alcoholism is and how it works. And it's very dysfunctional. And it's you know, I'm going to tell you guys too, because like I do work with a lot of people, and it's imperative that you begin to know and read. You know, you read all these other things. I know most guys, we get something in a box. We never read the instructions. That part I get.
Right.
but when your life is completely unmanageable and it's crumbling day after day, and it keeps getting worse and worse, and then you seek help.
Right.
And then I'm like, okay, hey, I'm here to help you. Tell me, why are you treating yourself the way you're treating? I don't know.
Yeah.
My God. It's like, you know so many things.
Yeah.
But when it comes to you, it's like, I don't know.
Right. And I think the cultural piece is important as well. She never would have sought out therapy or help. I mean,
that was weak.
Oh, absolutely.
Back, you know, in that culture
and in that time.
And they're very similar. My dad was from Italy. You know, I'm first generation, Mexico, Italy, and my mom was from England.
Wow.
You know, the shades may be a little different, but that's all the same shit.
It's all the
Excuse
same.
Me. Right?
Yeah.
Pick yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yep.
I'll give you something to cry about. How many times are you going to ask that question?
Yeah.
Don't speak until you're spoken to.
Yep.
What we say in this house stays in this house. And if I find
that's a big one.
Was it?
That's a big one, yeah.
And if I find out he gets out of his house,
right?
And you and I, we're like 5 years old. We're like, okay,
right?
Right?
Yep, that's a big one. That was huge. She would be mortified knowing I was here talking with you. You know, like, or even, I mean, she didn't like that I even went to therapy. She knew that I was going to therapy for a little while, and she said, "All they do is blame the parents." And I'm sure without that understanding, that is what it seems like.
100%. You feel like you're getting attacked.
Yes.
Because they're talking about you. And and I think, get rid of all the culture and all that. I think everybody knows right from wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, within reason.
Sure.
Everybody kind of knows when they went a little too far.
Right.
Or your mother suffered from alcoholism.
Absolutely.
I never met an alcoholic. Truly, and I'm 63, and I never met an alcoholic that likes themselves,
right?
Or is proud of themselves,
right?
Or drinking over a little girl getting a cheeseburger or something,
right?
You know, drink doesn't make people feel very nice,
right?
And I know, you know, I think all people, the core of us is good, you know. Like I think we're all born with 100 pieces, you know.
Yeah.
Just over time, and they get taken away, of course, and we get really separated from ourselves. But
yeah, no, I 100%
agree
with that. Like, I've become so aware of my body.
Yeah.
Like, even if I'm not in my mind, like I can come up with the thought of, oh, I went against my authentic self.
Yeah.
I still feel it.
Yeah.
Like my authentic self, my higher self, if you will, it speaks to me, but it's just little tings, little pings, little twinges, But over time, those build up, and they build up, they build up, and then it turns into anger and resentment, and you sometimes you don't even know why, you don't even understand why. But I think it's going against who I am authentically.
Yeah, and also, you know, I think you, me, I think everybody's like this spiritual being.
Yes.
You know, having a human experience.
Yes.
And it's the experiences that start shutting down a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And we either want to use, we want to act out mm-hmm. sexually, we want to eat our feelings, we want to gamble, or whatever the heck the case may be.
Right.
Just want to get out of this feeling because, right. like you said, there's no authenticity in there.
Right.
And we're looking for all this stuff, synthetic pretty much.
Yes.
And there's nothing fake about what you're talking about. There's nothing mm-hmm. fake about your experience. And obviously, a human being's not synthetic.
Right.
But so how can you really expect all this synthetic stuff to work?
Right.
But
yeah.
I just, like, I love this platform, too, because I get to educate. Like, mm-hmm. you can look it up now. I used to be the same way. But you'll read how to fix a light switch. You'll read how to change this. You'll go mm-hmm. to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't even know this person. And you'll listen to everything
right.
they say. You don't have, like, a debate with them. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Just fast forward that you watch everything. And if you don't even hear it right, you know, you put it on reverse. Oh, wait, what did he say? Or what did she
right.
say? Oh, hook that up. Just to fix something.
Right.
But when it comes to this.
Right.
I'm telling you, if you're struggling with mental health, if you're struggling with substance abuse, if you have trauma, if you're a first responder, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But so let's take police officers, first responders.
Yeah.
They run towards when everybody's running, and then they assess and they treat.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty right? You get to the scene, assess, treat, right?
Right.
Boom, 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 boom. There's no debates. Everybody's working together, like the synchronicity, boom, boom. But when it comes to me, I take my equipment off. And me as a Marine, I take my equipment off. I'm like, you know what I mean? I couldn't stand how I felt.
Right. Yeah, there's no after a call, there's no, how's your self-care?
Yeah.
You know, there's none of that.
I'm so glad you just said that. That's the name of our first responders program.
Mm.
After the call.
After the call.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that.
Isn't that phenomenal?
I can't.
Oh, my God. You guys seen it live. We did not. I never rehearse. You'll never get an edited rehearse. I want you to know what we do, regardless of the guest. Because game recognizes game and real recognizes real.
I love that.
I can't believe she just said that because that's. That's the name of the first responders for after the call, because everybody just slaps each other's butt and says, you good? Yeah, good, good. All right, good night.
Or make a joke.
That dark humor.
Yep, dark humor. That was actually taught to us in the academy of how to deal with the hard things that we're going to see. It was literally taught to laugh and make jokes together. It wasn't.
That brings you a little relief.
It wasn't inferred or, you know, anything. It was. That's what they said.
Yeah.
That's how you care for yourself. That's how you deal with things.
I was talking to a group about a few months ago about something I'm involved in. And so this fella, he was on some committee. Mm-hmm. And after I explained what I do and why I'm doing it, he started talking. Oh, this is a great one. And he started getting really emotional.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, my God, like. You know, you don't know, like, did I trigger, you know, did I activate, I don't like the word trigger, did I activate something in him mm-hmm. or a child, I don't know. And he said, my son, it was a very difficult time for my son and us.
Mm-hmm.
He said, my son was a fire rescue rookie, got on the scene, and the senior people told him to go get that guy's leg. It was severed. It was on a motorcycle. They caught a cable somewhere or something. And it severed his leg from the knee down, and they mm-hmm. told him to go pick that up and bring it back. And when he got to that point of it, obviously, I guess it had a tremendous effect on his son because he started getting really emotional about
mm-hmm.
it. That's this kid, you know, and having to do something like that. And then, you know, everybody's good and fine.
Yeah, I've actually experienced similar. It was a pedestrian versus vehicle on the interstate. And so the leg was all the way on the other side, and there's something.
Yeah.
It does something to you.
It does.
I don't know.
Well, you guys are heroes. you know, veterans or heroes that you are. It's, I think it's the perfect word. Mm. But even behind the uniform, mm-hmm. badge, however you want to put it, there's a human being. And with most, mm-hmm. I think over time, anything over time, and mm-hmm. then on top of that, you know, vets, Leos, fire rescue, first responders, they're going from a 0 to 100 over and over. And I think, Tia, I think for me, that's where the mental breakdown is. Mm. And the numbers are up there. Like, first responders, about 33% now. So that's 3 out of 10.
Wow.
So if we had 10 in here right now, you know, there's a really good chance that there's a few of our brothers or sisters in here just suffering in silence.
Yeah.
Because everything's good right. and fine. Crack yeah. another joke.
And a part of it is if, you know, if I admit that I need help, like, that would have, it puts a crack in the armor.
Mm.
And so knowing that there's a crack and not knowing the pressure of what's to come, like, you don't want to make that crack because you literally don't have the tools to know what to do. And that's what happened to me, you know, like it. I didn't ever say I needed help until after I was completely broken.
Mm.
But I think just from losing my mother, it just broke my armor. Like, I just didn't have, I couldn't make my armor any stronger. I couldn't suppress it anymore. But I think what fried my nervous system was just the tidal wave of everything that came. And so that little... I need help. You know, I had a really bad scene that I saw or whatever. I worked a really hard case. Mm. It's really difficult to ask for help because you can feel the quote unquote weakness it puts in what everything else you're holding back. And so that feels really scary in that moment. And so it feels safer. It feels stronger to just repress it and to say, no, I'm fine. That and defense mechanism.
And it just intrigues the heck out of me because it's like, I call it like that strange mental blank spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like when, you know, when the shit hit the fan, you would be running in.
Oh, yeah.
But for you, to make yourself vulnerable, it's like you're, I don't know where to, I don't know why all of a sudden this strange mental blank shot spot shows up on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the hardest thing for us to do. We spend all day on this thing.
Right.
But if I had to make a call for me, this thing all of a sudden becomes thousands of pounds.
Well, if you think about it, it does. I mean, just calling, you know, I want to use, you know, the 1,000-pound phone.
Yeah.
You know. But I mean, if you think about it, being vulnerable takes such strength. I mean, it takes a lot more strength to be vulnerable and open than it does to repress and hide. It doesn't feel that way when you're experiencing it. But having gone through it, being vulnerable and helpless, like my body forced me to be that way, unfortunately. But that was, I mean, I continue to be vulnerable. You know, I continue to go to meetings. You know, I go to 5 meetings a week and the other 2 are online.
Oh, I love it.
I just have to stay very active.
You're treating yourself like an adult. You're parenting yourself.
Exactly.
You've accepted your illness.
Yes.
And that was what I was trying to get to before. But like, again, I said it's live, so this thing can go all over the place. But I want you guys to think about like just learning about what's going on, whatever you may be feeling. Just learn more about it, you know, and that's where the greatest accomplishments are. Like, that's the secret sauce, doing what you don't want to do. If you're struggling with addiction, you know, alcoholism, mental health, trauma, it's scary. But the greater the struggle, the more glorious the triumph, you know.
There is a solution. Like, that's
for real, right?
The biggest thing that I hold on to. Like, I might not know what the solution is.
Yeah.
But most of the time I don't until I'm through it.
Yeah.
But I know now when something big happens because life keeps lifing.
Yeah. For real.
And I just, that's just what I say. You know, there is a solution. Mm. I don't know what it is, but that's okay.
Yeah.
There's a solution. And then doing the one step at a time, the tools that I've learned in recovery have just been, golly, man, just life-changing.
right?
Life-changing.
Well, I think it gets you back home to the mothership. And that's your body. That's my mm-hmm. body. That's my being,
yes.
you know. It gets us back home. Like, you know, I think addiction, you know, alcoholism, drug addiction, I think is 100% treatable.
Mm-hmm.
I do. And that's a fact, you know.
Yes.
Because the alcoholic or the addict has the gift of changing their thinking, because it's the thinking that keeps putting it in. I just celebrated 18 years on April 15th nice, last
dude.
Week.
Congrats, man.
Yeah. But I'm still physically screwed. One drink and the genie be let back out of the bottle, just the way my body responds.
Yeah.
It's like my allergy. Like every. It's cool if you got a bee allergy. Everybody's right. like on your side.
Right.
Hey, you got your EpiPen on? Hey, how many times I told you, if you're getting in this car, right. you got to have your EpiPen.
Right.
You know, like, that's my allergy, man. And yeah. it starts with, I don't like how I feel.
Right. Yeah. And for me, like, step one was the most difficult for me, you know, being powerless over drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have a trauma response to step one.
Wow.
Because growing up, you know, I couldn't be powerless, or, I mean, it was life or death.
Yeah.
And then as an adult, I couldn't be powerless being a cop.
Yeah.
It was life or death.
Yeah.
I couldn't be powerless over anything.
Yeah.
It was all an illusion. You know, I never was the most powerful thing. I sure thought that I was.
Yeah.
But I had to be in control at all times, and I couldn't be... You know, like, that's just, it was ingrained in me from childhood and then into my job, you know, all through my 20s. That's what I reinforced within myself. And so when I'm being asked, are you powerless over drugs and alcohol? It's like, no, I can control this.
Yeah. And no, there's so much stigma attached to it.
Yes.
Too,
yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
It's kind of like when I was a kid, like, I feel when I was a kid, I learned how to lie because, you know, you had those comments like, you know, when you're a kid, you just... You know, don't ask a kid a question if you're late. Because little Johnny or Susie, they'll go on 20 minutes later. They're still telling you how what's going on. And that's how I was. But, you know, it got to the point where it would be like, well, how many times have we told you, blah, 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 blah. Or blah, 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 blah. Don't do it like that. You're going to always ask questions. Blah, blah. And then that one day came along, and I forget who the heck it was. Somebody, you know, so how you doing? And I thought, I was leaving a little kid already. I'm like, well, every time I'm honest, something comes back like negative. So I got in that quagmire. I was like, good?
Right.
And when I said good, it was like, oh, you know, and I'm only 5 years old, but it seemed like eternity. Yeah. I was waiting for that split second. Oh, good job. And then right after that split second was the spears again, you know.
It's conditioning.
Conditioning. And in that moment, though, I'm totally convinced of it. Changed me otherwise. I learned how to lie. And I've been saying good and fine ever since.
Right. And I mean, it took me a long time to even admit that I was an addict. I think it, probably in your classes, I mean, I know that I did not think that I was an addict.
Yeah.
I was here for mental health.
Yep.
I was not here for, you know, the addiction part.
Yep.
Like, I would have rather been... crazy than an addict.
I get that a lot.
And I did not want to be in those groups. I did not want to be on that track. This was the only thing Beachway got wrong.
Yep.
Was that I am not an addict.
Yep.
I used because my mental health. You don't understand.
Man, you're spot on with that. I get it all the time.
Yep.
As soon as they walk out, they're drinking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I've had a couple of relapses since my time at Beachway.
Yeah.
I would go out for like a week, and then the guilt, and it just, you know, my sponsor has said, you know, there's nothing worse than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze.
So AA's right again.
Yes.
Because AA will ruin your buzz.
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. So I learned, you know, from that first relapse that I couldn't control alcohol. Well, maybe I can control weed.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, and then went
it's
on
a plant.
To that.
It's
yeah,
it's natural. Organic.
Yeah. It's not bad.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, if you've never met somebody who can ruin their life with just weed, you've met one.
Wow.
Like
especially today's weed. so strong.
Yeah.
We got people coming into a psychosis.
Yes.
And we got to level them out and like straighten them out and, you know, put them at detox level.
Yeah. I can absolutely destroy my life and my body with just.
What are some of the characteristics to you that come out like real fast out of the gate as soon as you go?
Oh, gosh. I shut down.
So your switch goes bink.
Yeah, I just completely shut down. Gotcha. Don't do anything. I isolate.
Gotcha.
Like I don't parent my children.
Yep.
I don't want to go to work. I don't want to do my work duties.
Yep.
I just want to be and feel good.
Does today's weed, not to be a disrespectful, but does today's weed still give you like the munchies and stuff?
Yeah.
You still get the munch. You know, back in the day, you grab your bag of Doritos, go out to the woods, you know.
Right.
Like.
But I kind of didn't even want to be bothered with that, man. Like, I just wanted to check out.
Yep.
Like, I would go out on my kayak and take my weed bag with me. And then it morphed into just, I bought a hammock because I love the hammocks at Beachway. but then I just wanted to lay in the hammock and smoke weed. And I have a picture somebody took of me, and I was in my hammock literally holding my weed bag.
Oh, wow.
Like, that was my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, clutching it.
Well, I'm glad you had enough stability long enough to where you caught yourself, you know.
Yeah, with the help of my family, you know,
good
my immediate family.
Yeah, good.
My husband helped me a lot.
Yeah.
He found Beachway. But also having a sponsor is so important.
Yep.
I found a wonderful sponsor who, I mean, she just loves me through it. She has shown me that people can be safe.
Yeah.
People can be trusted.
Yep.
That people are not perfect and that's okay.
Yep. 100%.
Just the acceptance, you know, acceptance is the cure for all of our problems is what I'm learning.
Yep.
And she lives that. She models it.
Good for her.
She shows me. And she has just taken me under her wing. I mean, she is just such a blessing in
that's
my
why
life.
That's why today I only go to literature-based meetings.
Yeah.
Because, this woman, everything you're mentioning, it's in the literature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, no disrespect. I'm just being honest, right? I got to be because I bullshitted myself my whole life. And that's what we do when we're not living the life. I don't go to a lot of meetings that aren't literature-based because I don't want to hear about your weed whacker and I don't want to hear about this. And I got really drunk and I did a lot of drugs and that stuff doesn't keep me sober.
Mm-hmm.
The literature does.
Right.
And so today, I only go to literature-based meetings, so the conversation or the topic will be on the literature, not what you want to say, you know?
I guess I didn't realize there was other I thought they all were literature-based.
Well, I mean, they should. Well, I shouldn't say should be, right? Because you got some topic discussions, you got some speaker.
Oh, okay.
Know, just literature-based.
Gotcha.
Big book.
The book studies.
Step studies, 12 and 12.
Gotcha.
Conference approved materials because there's so many books out there that aren't you know, just old school AA.
Gotcha.
Back in the day, AA success rate was incredible. Today, you know, I don't have my facts, but I know it's nowhere near what it used to be. That's why there's this big movement. I just heard this guy named Wally P. He's an author, too, but he's also almost 40-something years, I think, or just getting to 40 sober.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the archivists for AA. Just a bright guy, like, just phenomenal. I went to a couple of his seminars.
Yeah.
And he realized the need for getting back to the basics.
Yes.
So between his literature skills, his writing skills, and his love for AA and his incredible knowledge for AA, he wrote this Back to Basics program.
Gotcha.
It's all literature based. It's not
the Back to Basics.
Yeah. It's not like a Hazelton worksheet and all. Back to Basics.
Yeah.
And you can bang out somebody, you can grab a new guy, or you can just show up and grab a new, whatever.
Yeah.
In 5 weeks, you can go through the steps.
Nice.
But it's incredible.
Yeah.
So I bring a lot of people there that are repeaters just to get them going again. I'll bring somebody. My first sponsor, Pat, he's been doing the Back to Basics 4 years. This guy's He's like Dr. Bob, the founder. Wow. They say Dr. Bob sponsored over 5,000 people that he took through the steps. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy, right? Wow. And he just does these back to basics. Boom, boom. So if I pick up somebody and I don't have the time, because right now I got a guy and I have to meet him every Sunday at 10.
Sure.
And we're always good for at least 2 hours every Sunday because I'm taking him from the beginning through the book.
That's incredible.
You know, so if I don't have that time to give, there's nothing wrong with taking somebody through a back to basics.
Yeah.
It's kind of like an athlete.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Like, you know, they're in a slump, with all the technology today, plus they're all getting like hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, get this guy straight quick, you know.
Right.
But he's still, or she's still in a slump.
Mm-hmm.
And you got that old school coach comes walking out, he's all rough, or she's all like, you know, get that guy back to basics. Start them all over again.
That's the foundation.
It always is, right?
I mean, it's a building can't stand without that foundation. You know, I've mixed in some NA with my AA. Like I go to NA and AA programs. Some people, I don't know. It can be weird, but for me,
I think they have two different messages.
Yeah, I would agree. I definitely need the structure of AA.
Yeah.
I need the.
No offense, NA people.
No. I love
AA, you know.
I love NA. That has changed my program so much, though. Like mixing them.
Yeah.
But keeping, you know, I'm still a child. I'm an adult child still.
Yeah, ACOA and would be good for you, too.
Yes, I do the, I have a book that I read from.
I love the red book that they got.
Yeah, I don't have that one. I have like the, Bettering Your Recovery, I don't know, their daily reading book that I read from.
You know what's good with that too is Melanie Beatty.
Oh, the Codependent.
Codependent No More. She has a daily reader too, boy.
Oh, really?
Okay. And she was, you know, codependency.
Yeah.
It's an addiction. It's an illness.
It absolutely is.
And it can be just as severe as alcoholism and drug addiction. And so she's both. And codependent. Wow. Severe.
Yeah, I do experience the codependency. That was codependency was a third wheel in our marriage. For 16 years. We're separated right now. And just coming back from Beachway and he's like, who are you? I don't know how to function in this, you know, and you're no longer rescuing me, you know, or I can no longer rescue you, rather.
Yeah, yeah.
I was the victim and he was the rescuer.
I see that a lot.
Yeah, it just didn't, we just missed each other and we're great friends, you know, we get along great.
Yeah, that's cool.
But I cannot participate in that anymore, you know, and it's something that sometimes it just needs to happen.
It's very common.
Yeah.
Because from my experience, you know, with all the people, again, that I work with, it's, you know, I have to look at, like, how these relationships started and where were we mentally and emotionally and how mature were we when we first met.
Right.
And then as we move through the time spent together and then one person needs their help, they start getting the help, and then you start seeing all the dysfunction in this relationship because that's what you knew when you met.
Yeah. You don't know that there's another way.
Correct. And I see a lot of relationships. Mm-hmm. One goes one way and one goes the other way, especially when that one person gets well.
Right. Yeah. It just changes the entire
dynamic. Yeah, you're not there anymore.
Right. The entire dynamic changes.
Correct.
I'm lucky that we're still friends. We co-parent really well together.
Good.
It's not... You know, it's not like the horror stories that you hear.
Yeah.
I don't know how people survive that.
I think that's really brave of you too, and very mature of you too, adult like.
Sure.
You know, there's still a kid involved. You know, and our kids didn't ask to be here. And,
right.
You know, so that's wonderful, and everybody's winning.
Exactly.
And it might become attractive to your husband, like. Man, maybe I should do some of that work.
I would love it but then I would have to put my expectations in place because I'm like, go to Beachway and change everything about you, and then come back.
Yeah. What do you think your biggest? What would you say your biggest moment was at Beachway?
There were several, but the one that sticks out all the time that I always go back to, there was once the ticks. were not happening like 24/7. And I just was reactive to certain things, certain words, inner child. If anybody said inner child, it was like just set me off.
Yeah.
But sometimes I would have dreams, a little more like night terrors.
Yeah.
And then I would wake up in these horrible PTSD episodes. And one day my, main therapist, she came to my room, which is not common to happen. You know, usually you go to your therapist's office.
Yeah.
But, you know, they let her know that what was happening.
Yeah.
And she came to my room and she sat on my bed with me and I'm curled up in the fetal position,
yeah,
crying hysterically. And she held my hand and she just sat with me, sat with me in it. She didn't yell at me. She didn't tell me to knock it off.
Yeah.
She didn't tell me to stop attention seeking,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
But she just sat in it with me and she held my hand and I was like a little girl and, you know, that 4-year-old little girl. And
yeah,
I remember holding her hand and she always had her nails done. And I would sit there and like just touch her nails.
Yeah.
And I just remember I don't know how long, you know, we
yeah
sat there and did that,
yeah,
but I did that to ground and come out
yeah
of it and
yeah
her soft voice.
Yeah.
And then she walked me across campus and like shielded my body from everyone. Like
yeah
nobody, it's not like everybody was coming after me.
Yeah.
It
yeah
just
yeah, yeah
was the state of mind I
yeah
was in.
Yeah.
And she walked me all the way to her office and like that moment, that nurturing, that mothering that I received, like, I mean, it still affects me.
Yeah. That was a beautiful moment. Like,
I just had never had that. I did, and it also showed me how to be that for my children, because I would tend to be what my mother was, you know, toughen up, stop crying. This world
yeah
is hard, and it's going to eat you up if
yep
you don't,
yep,
you know, toughen up. And I didn't know how to be anything else, and neither did my mother.
Yeah.
You know, and
yep,
like,
yep,
we were what we knew.
Yeah.
And
yeah
so experiencing that moment, that was a life-changing moment. And I realized what human connection could be. And I didn't know that it could be that way.
Yeah,
you know?
Intimate, very intimate moment. And those are the things that change these
right
these situations, you know.
Yeah, and it rewrites it in your brain. Like in my brain, like it was rewritten that day.
Well, maybe that little part of your life, right? Your the inner child in you,
mm-hmm,
that little piece was finally repaired by just that love and that hand holding. Come on,
Human contact.
The human contact, you
know?
Yeah.
And it might have just been, you know, an everyday thing. You know, I don't know as therapists what they go through, but you know, like as an officer, you know, you go out, you deal with people, and it's just what you do every single day. But the people that you're dealing with, they don't see you every day. And so it might just be a typical day in your life, but it could also be life-changing for somebody.
Yeah.
And that day, that changed my life. It really did. It then we had a new problem of the attachment that I had to her. Then I became a koala, a baby koala.
Yeah.
You know, like don't
yeah
leave
you became
me
a little needy.
Yes,
every emergency became her emergency.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, I need, but I can't do anything without her. So it just, but it was still a step towards healing.
That sounds like a classic Beachway move. The therapists there are just wonderful people.
Amazing.
They have a very unique family, like the therapists.
Yeah.
I think the one that has, I think 3 years, maybe 4 years, is the one with the least amount of time.
Sure.
A lot of them are 8, 9, 10,
right,
10 plus. Our
yeah
clinical director, Carrie, she's been there
amazing
over 10 years.
Yeah.
Directing for 7, 8 years now.
Yeah. They,
amazing people. And it's like a resort.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, that's why I am here now, because I was exposed to what Florida could be.
That's really cool.
They diagnosed me with the conversion disorder, like the inability to process emotion because I had repressed for so long.
Yeah.
And it was the team of clinicians who got together and sat around a table and figured me out.
Amazing.
They figured out what I needed, you know, and it's not, it's not a common diagnosis, in the world. Like, it's not every.
Yeah, very, very creative. They're very creative. Yeah. Do you know they eat lunch together every day?
I do, yeah.
So they can exchange information and help people, like, you know, they're collaborative.
Well informed. They very always well. Knew when it was my second time of getting caught with my vape in the.
You know, I was also thinking too, before we wrap it up, I was thinking, I think if your mother had the chance that you had, I think she'd be really proud of you, actually. Because I think that's probably where most of us would want to be at our in our lives at some point or another, you know, like. The ability to be vulnerable, the ability to say I'm not okay, the ability to talk about things that happened to me that altered, changed the course or direction of my life. You know, like, I think your mom would have a lot of respect for you if she's seen you. I mean, who are we to say that she doesn't, you know, doesn't know that you're here now? You know, I don't know. But I think if she was still here in the physical world.
Sure.
I think she would say, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm really proud of you. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's where she's at now. I think she knows.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm under a more spiritual path. I'm on a more spiritual path. Yep. And I think that, you know, that we're here to learn and evolve and grow. And then we move on.
Correct.
Maybe do it again.
And I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. Why would we have the privilege, it's a privilege, to intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually grow until the day we die?
Hmm.
At the same time, it's killing us a day at a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I find that very interesting. So to me, it's kind of like the most courteous murderer I know. You know what I mean? I'm sucking the life.
The most sympathetic.
I'm sucking the life out of you every day.
Right. No,
but I'm going to give you the. I'm going to give you the opportunity to keep growing every day.
Yeah.
Keep being the best you every day, and the gift of choice every day. You're like, I don't know, man. Some of this stuff can get so deep. It's like, you know what? I can't handle it. I'm getting overwhelmed.
Yeah.
My brain's starting to get flooded. I'm just going to end it. Go by. It's beyond knowledge. Some things are just beyond knowledge.
It took me a long time to say, okay, I'm not going to have it all figured out. Because I tried. I tried to understand absolutely everything about the universe.
Yeah, good luck.
And I just had to come to the point of, I'm not going to know. And that's okay.
I heard somebody say once, you know, we're here 80 years.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, 90.
Sure.
Let's say 90. This thing's been turning for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
You'll just scratch the surface in your 90 years of what to know or what to learn.
I think that's why we do it so many times.
Right? Oh, my Lord.
So I wanted to share that with you. I got this piece on my arm. It's my inner child and my higher self.
Oh, nice.
Nature. And so when I only can, you know, people looking at it, they don't know how deep it is.
Yeah.
But for me, or if I choose to share it, it's just a constant reminder of like when I fall into those maladaptive behaviors, you know, the low self-worth, that did serve me as a child because it helped me to be invisible.
Yep.
It helped me to not have any needs. It helped me to not be in trouble, you know, so it did serve me at one time. But when I start to feel those negative self thoughts, you know, and I can say, thank you. Thank you for keeping us safe when we were little.
Yeah.
You know, thank you for figuring out how to survive our environment. But I'm here now. And we don't have to do it that way anymore.
Yeah.
And Beachway taught me, you know.
Yeah.
And I literally, Beachway is, everybody in my life knows what Beach Way is. Yeah. Like, I don't have to explain it. I can just refer to it as Beach Way. Like, it is, my life is now defined as pre-Beach Way and after Beach Way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's how it is described. Like, it's just completely different. And now I can take care of her, and I can say I'm here.
Yeah. And now I think your greatest gift, too, is you can actually show somebody how to do it.
That's the
dream. If they're willing.
That's now the dream.
Like, how
the
cool is that?
Is ever evolving, you know, this ever evolving dream. But now the dream is to pay it forward.
It's like a hashtag real shit.
Yeah.
Like,
to help someone.
You people like me and you, we go to Home Depot our whole lives looking for ice cream, you know?
Yeah.
And then we get pissed. Where's the ice cream? What do you mean?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because nobody showed me how to stop going.
Right.
Tim, I can show you if you want how to stop going and actually go to like Dairy Queen or something, Tim.
Right.
Or,
and it's so not, you know, before I think it would have been to feed my ego, you know, as a police officer. It was all ego driven.
100%.
You know, I'm helping, saving people, you know. And it's not that. It's just the drive to just love people.
Yep.
I just want to love people. And, you know, and my sponsor, like, she has shown me.
Yep.
How to do that, and that I can love, and it's not about my ego.
That sponsorship.
Yes.
Because the book tells us specifically, there's a chapter in the big book about working with others.
Yeah.
And it's just, those guys, it was just, everything's amazing about it. I think you're amazing, and to be here, thanks, and I agree. And I don't mean that from an ego. Because I know what it's like to not remain humbled. Because every time I wasn't humbled, I got humbled really quick. It's either you remain humbled or you be humbled. So, I am. I'm definitely a miracle.
Thank you for being part of my story.
Yeah, it was wonderful. And thank you for sharing it with us. Is there anything last thing, you know, that person that might just be like, I don't know, contemplating, I don't know, continuing another day high, or I don't know, calling for help.
I think what would have helped me is to know that the help is there for you too. There is a solution, and it is there for you.
Yeah.
You're not excluded. You know, like, the help is there for everyone who wants it. Like, that's the key. I think, you know, that the low self-worth that I referred to, like, it, I didn't think that I deserved to go to somewhere like Beachway.
Yeah.
But I did. Yeah, she did.
Oh, yeah.
And anybody out there who needs the help, like, they do too.
Yeah.
Like, it's there for you.
Yep. And if you can't make it to Beachway, I've been around for a really long time. I'll help you. And if I can't help you, maybe I'll call T and say, hey, T, do you know? We were just talking before, you know, actually on that, I'm thinking about it. It's been very powerful since we've seen each other again.
Yeah.
Great conversation on the campus. Mm-hmm. Then we come here, and you're like, hey, I'm here. I come downstairs, meet you on the corner in downtown West Palm. And as we met each other, a woman goes by, oh, I love your tat. I love your artwork. You know, and then here we just closed it up with the girl on the be good to yourselves today.
Yeah, man. And you're worth it.
You're worth it. And if you're struggling, reach out, whether it's to somebody like Tia and somebody like me or somebody. But please take care of yourself today. You deserve a good life. You deserve to have some peace and love in your life. And my name's Tim Roberto. I'm definitely a proud team member of the Beachway Therapy Center. If you want to reach out to me, I'm all over social media. You can hit me direct, obviously, on that too. But you can email me at tim.r@beachway.com. If you want to come for a tour, whatever you like, okay? And with that being said, we're going to close this out. Thank you, Tia.
Thank you.
It was a wonderful time with you. I really think we reached somebody. We had some really good points in there. And you guys have the great rest of your day. Peace and love.